Hey, welcome back to Strong Tower Radio Today. I'm George Corliss.
I'm Jelaine Fenner.
And I'm Teresa Williams.
And she's the Garden Gal, and our program today is Good Growing with the Garden Gal. She is the, what exactly is your title there?
Executive Director.
Executive Director. Mm-hmm. Okay. And that's
it means the, I keep all the balls juggling in the air.
Yeah. Oh, the Wexford Conversation. Yeah, that place over there. Yeah. Now, Teresa, there's every county pretty much has these.
Yeah, every county is covered by a conservation district. In some counties, maybe two have joined together, but everybody's covered by one.
What was the reason why the fathers of agriculture decided to do this way back when?
They got their start in the Dust Bowl. Bowl days, we had some severe soil erosion here in Michigan and in the Great Plains and a lot of areas during the 30s. And it was a movement got started by a gentleman named Hugh Hammond Bennett, because he was out in the land and he saw this incredible loss. We were losing our topsoil, losing what sustains our plant life. And he thought of a national program where an agent of the federal government would go out to a community if the community wanted it and if the community formed a special district to work on soil conservation. And that's how all our conservation districts in the country got started.
So do most states,
each county, like us?
I mean, yeah, almost
it's nationwide.
Each county. Okay.
Yep.
Well, but did it start mainly in the Midwest?
The first, actually, demonstration area was the Coon Creek watershed in southwest Wisconsin. That was one of the very first ones.
Why Wisconsin? You wouldn't think there'd be a lot of soil erosion in Wisconsin.
It's pretty hilly. It was in an area of Wisconsin called the Driftless Area, where glaciers never came, and it is quite hilly there. And if you see a lot of these beautiful aerial photographers' work of contour strip farming, where you have a curvy strip of wheat followed by a curvy strip of hay or a curvy strip of corn. They're farming across the slope, so there isn't much change in the slope. And a lot of those pictures are from that area of Wisconsin.
Really?
Yeah.
I remember looking at something on PBS a number of years ago. They had a special where they were talking about the Dust Bowl days.
Yeah, and the Dust Bowl had its center in the High Plains, and that's kind of where Oklahoma, Kansas, Texas Panhandle, in there, that's where they.
Because at first they basically raped the soil.
I mean, the wind just blew everything. Yeah.
Well, what happened is they'd had a lot of two things coincided. The advent of the moldboard plow and tractors, so that all of a sudden you could till a lot more acreage than you could before with a horse. And then they had a series of good years where they thought, yeah, we can grow wheat because they had good rains. And they basically got rid of all their soil organic matter, but the fact that they had good rains for a number of years sort of saved them. And then we got into what's more the typical weather pattern for that part of the world. And when it got drier, and it got even drier than typical, when we went through drought and the soil had lost all its moisture, there was no plant life left to hold that soil together. And a strong wind would come up and it would just blow the soil away. And these dust clouds became huge, darkening cities, darkening towns. And they even made it from the Great Plains all the way to our nation's capital in Washington.
When you saw some of those, the pictures from back then, you know, those old movie pictures, it was just stunning to see that. I mean, it was just like clouds of these, that topsoil.
Yeah, and then black clouds.
Just, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, there was recently, I forgot where it was, a year or two ago, the news showed this dust going through a city. It was unbelievable because, you know, they filmed it, just the dust coming through. And it just was... You couldn't hardly see the buildings anymore.
But then I noticed, you know, when they made the, I'm not going to say it wrong again, the conservation districts, they started coming up with different ideas on how to plow, right?
Different techniques, yeah.
Yeah. Can you kind of share us a little bit about that?
Sure. Some of the things that you can do to at a farm level to help reduce soil erosion is you can farm across the slope rather than up and down it. You can put in rotations of crops where you have some crops like corn or soybeans that you take that can leave the soil bare at certain times of the year. And you can put them in rotation with things like a hay or a small grain like wheat. Other things you can do is there's types of farming called no-till farming where you leave a lot of the crop residues on the surface of the soil. You can put in windbreaks to stop the wind from going for miles across an open area. And if you've got a lot of slopes, there's different things you can do within those slopes, like put in a grassed waterway so that when the water leaves the field, it's leaving over a cover of grass and it's not eroding a ditch out of the field.
Huh. That was interesting. I knew some of those, but and you look at some of those pictures, like Jelaine was saying, from the sky, it's just stunning the way that they are able to do those things. Mm-hmm. And then they've got, they put the GPSs on the tractors now so they can about draw a picture of mom and pa kettle there if they want to out there in the field, I'm sure. So, hey, if you just tuned in, that was me blathering. I'm George Corliss, and we've got Jelaine Fenner here. And then we've got the garden gal with us, Teresa Williams. This segment, we're talking about raspberries and blackberries. Teresa, why raspberries and blackberries?
I like to eat them.
Okay, that's a good reason.
And I thought maybe your listeners might enjoy them too.
Yeah.
And raspberries and blackberries are another plant that it's good to put in or plan for while they're dormant. You know, if a raspberry plant is in full leaf, it's going to go through a lot of shock. So if you think about now, this time of year, late March or maybe early April, depending on when you're listening to this, you can prepare that soil and get ready for those dormant bare root plants to get them in the ground.
Now, Teresa, what about, and I'm sure all of us have seen these before, but on some of our property that we used to own, we had a lot of volunteer raspberries, mm-hmm. it seemed like. Can you tame them?
You can corral them. I don't know if you can tame them. What you can do, if you have a wild berry, you can certainly make them more productive than what they naturally would be by thinning them out, providing them water, providing them nutrients if they need it. But they're not usually going to be as productive as some of the named varieties that you can buy in the store.
Okay. Now, say you want to start a raspberry or a blackberry patch. What do you do? How do you start?
Okay. Well, first, think again, like your fruit trees, they do better on lighter soil. So see if you check out your soil, see what it's like. If it's heavy, you're going to have a tough time with brambles. I just don't recommend brambles on heavy clay soil. They don't do well.
Is everybody cursed that has clay for soil?
If you have clay for soil, and you want to do brambles, you're going to have to make mounds to plant those brambles on because they're just not going to do well in clay.
Okay. So, but it doesn't seem like anything does well in clay. Does anything grow well in clay?
Oh, yeah. If it has organic matter, moist soils are great for things like salad crops. Think about crops that have a lot of water in them. Those do well on the heavier soils.
Okay, so
and when we have a drought year, very little rain.
About 1% of our stuff. So what about, all right.
Well, there's things if you have clay, you can do a lot with adding organic matter to make it more workable.
All right. So what are some other things that we have to do for raspberries and blackberries?
Like all the other crops, I'd recommend that you do a soil test. So if you can do a soil test and amend the soil with anything that the test results come back and say you need. So that's basically it. And you want to get rid of the weeds because raspberries are a perennial crop. Once you have them planted, you're not going to go back in there and plow to get rid of your weeds. So take care of any weed problems that you have before you put those berry bushes in.
I have a question. We talked, about soil testing. There is a cost.
Yeah. The MSU home and garden test is currently $25.
Okay.
Some of the lab tests that, say, of a farm co-op, those are usually less expensive.
Okay.
No. How soon, Teresa, are we going to get from when we initially plant until we have a harvest?
It depends on the kind of berry that you have. Most of the time, I'm going to say 2 years, but there are some that are called Primoking fruiters, or you can think of them as fall raspberries. You can get a small harvest your first fall if you plant a fall-bearing raspberry.
You said primocane.
Yeah.
So like makes me think of primary
the first
cane.
Year. Okay. Yeah. There's two types of canes. There's primocanes, which is your first year cane. And then there's what we call floricanes. Those are your second year canes. And those on a traditional raspberry the second year canes are the ones that have the florals or the blossoms on them.
So why would you want to do the 2 year versus the, why would you want to do the Floracane versus the Primacane?
Okay. The Primacane in their second year, they're going to have a large crop of berries in July. And the Primacane, the fall bearing ones, you're going to have to wait till fall to get raspberries. So maybe you want both, because maybe you'd want raspberries both in the summer and in the fall.
So then you're planting two different varieties?
I do. Yeah.
Wow.
That's interesting.
So when I'm preparing, let's say, my lot to be able to plant these things, how big of a lot should I go for? I mean, you know, let's say if I want to just have some fresh fruit.
Sure. You know, two raspberry plants for one person can provide you a lot of fresh fruit. So it's about, you know, are you feeding one person? Are you feeding a family? Two raspberry bushes per person is nice. That's a nice amount. It's not enough to can or make jam at, but it's plenty to have a nice fresh harvest.
So if you had a fairly large garden, could you plant 6 or 8 or 10 of these, do they call them bushes? They call them clumps? They call them...
Well, on a traditional red raspberry, if you plant a cane, or they're usually rooted canes, they're going to spread, the red raspberries too. So you actually need to thin them out each year, not the first year, but after that, once they get going. You want to thin them out so that each separate cane has 1 to 2, or there's 1 to 2 canes per square foot. So they will spread, and you actually have to control them, because they'll take over if you don't.
Now, you're saying cane.
Mm-hmm.
George talked about a bush, and I'm thinking raspberry bush. Those are not the same. That's not an interchangeable term?
You know, with our black raspberries, they come out of one central place, and maybe that looks more like a bush. The way raspberries grow is they'll send out roots, and then from those roots in different places, these are the red raspberries, new canes will come out from various places on those roots, and it's not one compact.
So when you're saying cane, just pardon me if I don't understand.
That's,
I'm so, thinking, I mean, there might be other people like me.
Okay, yeah.
So when you're saying a cane, I'm like a shoot?
Yeah, a shoot. Yes.
Okay.
Raspberries come out in lots of shoots. Sorry for the
okay.
Good thing you cleared that up. They have shoots come out from their roots in all different places.
Oh, okay.
It's not just one area. The black raspberries do all come out from one crown, one central area, and that might look more like
a bush.
A bush.
Okay.
How tall are they going to get?
The red raspberry bushes, I've seen them get over 5 feet tall. It depends how you trellis them and how good your growing conditions are.
That was the
are.
Next question, trellis or not the trellis?
I recommend trellis, because when those canes or shoots get fruit on them, they will bend over. And if they bend over, you know, they could touch the ground, the rodents could eat them, they could get dirty. If the wind is blowing the canes around a lot, that they don't produce as well. So I like to see a 2 strands of wire trellis to kind of keep those canes corralled, so they're not blowing all over, and when they have fruit on them, they can lean up against the wire and not hit the ground.
Now, is the object a transplant, or do they just transplant themselves?
They spread themselves. The red ones do. The black ones don't, but the red ones do.
Okay. And so you can make rows of them. You could make decorative little areas in your garden, whatever you want to do.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and just have some fun with it. Now, you've mentioned a couple of different types of plants. Is there, once again, a whole myriad of them to choose from?
Yeah, there's lots of different varieties of raspberries and black raspberries. And I should clear up, what's the difference is between a black raspberry and a blackberry? A black raspberry, and another word for it is a black cap, and that's a great word because it's like a cap. The center is hollow. So if you like thought of a baseball cap, and you know there's nothing in the, if you turn a baseball cap over, the center's hollow. That's a black raspberry, sometimes called a black cap. A blackberry has a white core, and it's got a solid center. And the black raspberries are hardier than the black berries. We're north of US 10, and it's hard to plant domesticated blackberries up here and get them to survive. They're just not hardy enough. So if you want blackberries, there's wild ones that would grow up here.
That's what I was going to say. There's lots of wild
ones. There's lots of wild ones, and those do great. But for some reason, all the varieties that they've bred seem to be bred to adapt to more southern conditions than we have up here.
So if you're out in the woods, you find some raspberries or blackberries, You could transplant them?
Well, if you have the owner's permission, and the other thing is if you're not growing domesticated raspberries, because those wild ones tend to have more resistance to diseases and things than our ones that are domesticated. So I wouldn't mix them. Either go with wild or go with bought and plants.
So you're on the National Forest, you can't dig up and transplant?
No. They frown upon that. So.
Okay, so once we get a harvest, what are some of the different things that we can do with raspberries and blackberries and the such?
You know, I think of that in two things. You know, what kind of things are desserty that may be sweet, and what kind of things are not desserty and sweet. And I like to put up a lot of fruit in the not desserty and sweet category. And what I do is for raspberries, if you clean them, wash them, and then spread them out to dry on, say, a cookie sheet, and freeze them just like that. And as soon as they're frozen, put them into a freezer container of some kind, a bag or box, whatever you use. They make great smoothies in the wintertime.
Oh.
Yeah. And they don't need, you put a banana and some raspberries and a little bit of milk in, and it's a healthy way to enjoy fruit in the wintertime without added sugar. Of course, you can always make a jam and pies and traditional fruit, things like that.
I love these berries like that, but I'm cursed with, I don't know what kind of teeth you would call it, but I've got to take a toothpick and just...
Those seeds get you.
Them little rascals, yeah. I'll tell you, I'm picking at them for a long time afterwards, so... Teresa, next month, what are we going to be talking about?
We're going to be talking about starting to plant out some of those perennials and cold-tolerant crops in our Things to Do category. I'm going to continue our conversation that we started today, what is soil versus dirt? And our crop of the month next week is one of those early spring delights, lettuce.
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 Do you eat a lot of lettuce?
Yeah, I do like lettuce.
I didn't ask you that.
Do I eat a lot? Probably don't eat enough.
Okay.
But I do like lettuce.
Okay. I was just checking.
And it's a good crop to grow. Easy crop.
It's an easy crop to grow, yes.
Yep. Yeah. Well, that's our program for today, folks. And once again, you can stop by our website at strongtowerradio.org if you've missed any of this, or if you want to tell your friends about it so they can listen to that program again. And it's good growing with a garden gal. And Teresa, thanks so much for stopping by.
Thanks, George. Yeah, thanks, Jelaine.
It was fun. I really appreciate
Learned a lot.
Yeah. I didn't rib you too hard, I hope.
No, I wasn't crying too bad. Okay. You guys just didn't see me off air. The girls here did. So we just want to thank you so much for tuning in. And always remember that God loves you with an everlasting love, and he'll never leave you nor forsake you, even for a moment.
Bye, folks.